Please be seated. Our first case this morning is case number 55460, Nivens v. TA Operating Corporation. This is a case that we wanted with another case, Foster v. Costco, which we thought we'd have both arguments together, but unfortunately Foster v. Costco got continued. So I just want to apologize for the Reno attorneys for having to come down here. I think at one time we had this scheduled in Reno and then we had it scheduled in Las Vegas. So please forgive us. We try to accommodate the attorneys both in Clark County and in Washoe and the rules as much as we can since we are, quote, the northern panel. But thank you for accommodating us to be down here because we've got some other arguments this morning with some Clark County lawyers. We have Mr. Becko for the appellant and Mr. Kent for the respondent. Mr. Becko.
May it please the court, counsel. Again, my name is Tom Becko, and I represent the appellant in this case, Denise Nivens. The issue in this case, obviously, is whether or not the district court properly granted summary judgment in a case involving a slip and fall. Ms. Nivens fell on February 27th, 2007, while entering, or actually exiting, the Travel Center's facility. It's a big 24 hours, 7 days a week, casino, restaurant, convenience store, and service station in Reno. The defendant in the case, Travel Centers, moved for summary judgment allegedly upon the basis that claiming that Nevada should be or is what is known as a no-duty natural accumulation or Massachusetts-type rule jurisdiction in which a property owner owes no duty to remove natural accumulations of snow and ice from their property, and as a result, the move for summary judgment asked the court to dismiss the case, and in fact, District Judge Flanagan granted that motion. And I will submit to you that his decision is irreconcilable under existing Nevada law. If you look at his decision, what Judge Flanagan properly did was identify that there's really only two cases in Nevada that deal with the issue of injury occurring from natural accumulation, one being the Wiseman versus Hallahan decision and the other being Rogers versus Torrey. And I will submit to you that the Rogers versus Torrey decision absolutely proves that Nevada is not a Massachusetts rule or no duty rule, because in that case the Nevada Supreme Court reversed a summary judgment finding that there were questions of fact which required the case to go to the jury. And in fact, if Nevada was a no-duty rule, the district court would the Supreme Court would absolutely have affirmed that decision because there would have been no duty. That was clearly a natural accumulation case, and this court said we're going to let this case go forward.
Do you read Rogers as limited in any way to the fact that the injured plaintiff in that case was an employee who had no choice but to go across the icy parking lot?
I think what the Supreme Court did in that case is they looked at that. And what they did, they looked at that because of the restatement, adopting restatement 343A. Especially if the Woods case out of Delaware, I think really explains these two conflicting rules and shows that once you adopt 343A, which that court said, absolutely, this is the embodiment of the Connecticut rule, that once you adopt that, then you have to look beyond the basic issue of was it a natural accumulations, because if it's truly a natural accumulations jurisdiction, all you have to do is look at the question of whether it's open and obvious and is it a natural accumulation, and if the answer to those two questions is yes, the case is over.
Yeah, so, Massachusetts has given up on the Massachusetts rule, correct?
I believe they have. I mean, there's only a couple of jurisdictions, I think, that are really holding on to it, and I think it's something that's on its way out. It's archaic. It doesn't take into account what we are as a society. I mean, if you think about the Massachusetts rule, it really encourages a property owner to do nothing. Because if the property owner does nothing, he's got no liability. But if he goes out and attempts to make his premises reasonably safe, which I suggest to you under Moody versus Manny's Auto, that's what Nevada law requires, a property owner to make his premises reasonably safe for people coming onto it, including the removal of all hazards, whether they're natural or unnatural. The Supreme Court in Rogers had to go forward and look at that next element because they concluded that that's an issue. And that was the issue of fact, I think, that they said has to go to a jury to be decided about whether or not it was reasonable for the person, in that case Rogers, to go forward and encounter the hazard that she knew existed. And I just don't know that you want to define the outcome of this case about whether or not the person is an employee having to go forward or as a business invitee. I mean, Ms. Nivens was doing exactly what the travel centers wanted her to do. They advertised that right next to Interstate 80, that a huge truck stop, people come and go 24/7 to that place. I mean, she's doing exactly what they want her to do, and yet they don't have anybody on staff from essentially 3 p.m. until 6 a.m. the following day to take steps to protect people from the hazards that obviously occur in northern Nevada. So, you know, I don't know that it makes any difference whether or not the person is an employee having to go forward or not. That certainly has an issue when it comes to the question of was that person comparatively at fault for, you know, going forward into a condition that was hazardous. But, I mean, again, for them to come and say you acted unreasonably because you came to our premises and just the way we invited you to come. So I don't think that should alter the outcome at all, whether the person's an employee or not. It certainly bears on the issue of whether or not they're comparative in going forward and encountering the hazard. But beyond that, I don't think it should matter at all. Returning again as far as what the district judge in this case did, he looked and he said, okay, we have Rogers and we have Wiseman. And what the district court concluded is that I don't think it makes any difference whether this case occurred on a public sidewalk versus a private sidewalk, because the Wiseman case and the Herndon case both dealt with the issue of whether or not a property owner was liable for injuries that occurred on adjacent public sidewalk. And in those cases, the Supreme Court has pretty clear rules that if you as a private property owner make a special use of that public sidewalk, then you're going to be responsible for injuries occurring on that public sidewalk because you've changed the way that it's being used. And so what the district court judge did in this case was he looked at that and said, it doesn't matter to me whether this is private or public because under the Harrington versus Sciuffi case, he concluded that the open and obvious hazard rule applies even after comparative negligence was adopted. But what the district judge did, I think, that was really wrong is he applied Harrington in a situation where it's not a failure to warn case. And Harrington is very, very clear, it's very explicit, that the open and obvious rule only applies in a case where the theory is failure to warn.
But that's not faithful to the restatement. The Harrington case's reading of 343A, that is not purely a failure to warn rule of black letter law. I understand that Harrington's precedent and we follow it.
Right. And I think, you know, but if you look at some of the cases that were cited by the audit in this case, those were jurisdictions where they applied the open and obvious rule across the board. And I think that makes this very different than our case because in Nevada, you can apply the open and obvious. So when the judge applied open and obvious to this case, and somehow said, okay, we're going to use the rules of Wiseman that deal with public, adjacent public, and combine those two together, it's irreconcilable. It's just absolutely irreconcilable.
That Rogers is a better case supporting your position?
Absolutely. Rogers.
And Harrington. I'm just saying because the point Justice Pickering raised.
You know, it's very, very true. If you look at the language of Rogers, and I just want to focus on one little quote of it. This is the opening lines from the Supreme Court. This appeal from a summary judgment for the defendant in a damage suit for personal injuries requires our decision as to whether the owner of a shopping center parking lot may ever be liable to an invitee for failing to remove or otherwise treat natural accumulation of ice thereon when the invitee knows of the dangerous condition and voluntarily encounters it. The district court ruled that the owner could not be liable as a matter of law. We do not agree. I'm going to reverse that decision. If Nevada was a natural accumulation state, the Supreme Court would have said, you're right. District court, you're right. This was a natural accumulation although in our case, I don't believe this was in any way a natural accumulation. Once they went in and changed, once they went in and attempted to do something to remedy the situation, they took it outside the realm of natural accumulation. You look at the natural accumulation cases, and there are situations where people fall, you know, out in an open area where no one has done anything to try to do anything to correct the situation. I think in some senses, certainly in older years, long ago, it made some sense that if, you know, we're all, you know, in the same condition when it snows and there's ice outside, in that situation, we shouldn't impose any duty on the landowner that's greater than the individual. We're all encountering the same thing. But once they make the decision to go in there and attempt to do something to correct the situation, then it changes the whole world. Everything changes. And I think, you know, I noticed last night when I came down here, one of the great decisions on this point is the Bone case. And that was a case that was cited by the respondent in this. And in that Bone case, there was another case that was referenced. And I'm not sure how it is I didn't see it when I went through the stuff the first time. But it's a great case, and it describes very, very clearly exactly what happened in this case. And it's Willis versus St. Perry's Hospital. And in that case, I mean, this is virtually identical. There was a snowstorm. The people went out, attempted to try to correct, remove the snow and ice. They put down ice melt. And in that case, the court said, no, this is not a natural accumulation case. Once you go out there, once you remove the snow, once you put down ice melt, you've changed it. This is no longer a natural accumulation case. And they cited for the position that that court adopts natural accumulation. But that court, in the Bone case, where they went back and they said, once you embark upon the process of trying to correct the situation, then all rules are off. It's no longer a natural accumulation case. And I think under Wright versus Schrom in Nevada, it's very clear that once a person embarks upon the process of trying to correct the situation, even though they may have had no duty, they then assume that duty and they're responsible. And you'll note in the respondent's brief, they don't even attempt to address that issue. There's no way to argue it. I mean, on the one hand, they admit they went out and tried to do a good job. They didn't do a good job. Once they took that position, they could not. There was no way for them to oppose the Wright versus Schrum argument, and they never even attempted to do so.
Let me just ask a quick question. You think Wood versus Safeway has changed anything in slip and fall jurisprudence here in the state of Nevada?
I don't see that it does. I mean, I think from the standpoint of Wood, I think it just made a little clearer what our rules as far as how we deal with summary judgment is concerned. But in this case, there are so many questions of fact. With the evidence that we supplied to the district court they admitted they didn't have enough people. They admitted that they didn't have anybody after 3 p.m. There's conflicting evidence even amongst their employees about whether they shoveled this or whether they just threw ice melt. I mean, there were so many questions of fact. The district judge actually found in his decision that they did everything that was reasonable. Isn't that finding and deciding the question of breach? I mean, that's clearly a jury question. So I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
You have about 3 minutes and 12 seconds left.
Thank you.
Scott, on behalf of the respondent, let me ask you the same question. Has Wood changed anything in slip and fall jurisprudence as far as you're concerned?
Your Honor, I think only in the context that I think it heightened the requirement for a party opposing summary judgment in that they have to come forward and contravene and bring forward issues of fact, which the plaintiff really didn't do in this case, because all of this talk about natural accumulation and whether that this was a natural accumulation, there was no contrary argument to that presented in the district court to our argument that it was a natural accumulation. So I think in that context it changes it. But I really disagree with kind of the road that we're taking here, and that is that the appellant is trying to get us down this natural accumulation road, and really the road we should be on is the duty road, a policy decision about when is this court going
to
impose
Hank,
duty.
Hank, will you start the time? Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
When is the court going to impose a duty when the injured person has knowledge of the hazard? That's really the question. I think it's a secondary question about whether or not Nevada has a natural accumulation rule. And here...
But why doesn't... I mean, Justice Thompson's decision in Rogers versus Torre, if that's how you say it, he says that whether the plaintiff did so encountered the risk with due care or carelessly is not so clear as to preclude trial on this point. I recognize there's some tension with Sciuffi and Harrington about whether, you know, how comparative negligence fits in this, but it seems to me what Rogers is saying is it's a question of reasonableness on both sides. I don't know how you can read Rogers as consistent with your position. That's the trouble I have.
I can answer that question, Justice Pickering, and the answer is that in this case, there's no dispute that the plaintiff decided to take that path, and there were other paths. And in the Rogers versus Tor, the court concluded that the plaintiff didn't have a choice. She had to go over the slippery area. In this case, she didn't. There was a clearer path in another area. And remember, the distinction in the Rogers versus Tor is that what you brought up, your first question to Mr. Beckel, that being that isn't there a distinction that she was required to go to work and encounter that slippery surface? That's completely different in this case. And I agree with you. Rogers versus Tor is controlling. And that case affirmatively tells this court, the court's already made this decision that's necessary to decide this case. And let's go back to the restatement. The restatement is a possessor is not liable for physical harm caused in any activity or consideration known to the plaintiff. That's the basic general rule. So if the plaintiff knows of the harm, they're out, they're gone. And then there's the exception, unless the possessor should anticipate the harm. And Nevada has adopted Rogers versus Tor and said in Rogers versus Tor, in a situation where we have ice or snow, consider whether or not the plaintiff had to encounter that condition, didn't have a choice. That's what Rogers versus Tor said. In this case, it's not that case. This is a case where the plaintiff had a choice, and that choice is described in comment E to the restatement. Comment E says, in the ordinary case, an invitee who enters land is entitled to nothing more than knowledge of the conditions and dangers he will encounter if he comes. If he knows the actual conditions and the activities carried on and the dangers involved in either, he is free to make an intelligent choice as to whether the advantage to be gained is sufficient to justify him in incurring the risk by remaining on the land. The possessor of land may reasonably assume that he will protect himself by the exercise of ordinary care, or that he will voluntarily assume the risk if he does not succeed in doing so. Reasonable care on the part of the possessor, therefore, does not ordinarily require precautions or even warning against dangers which are known to the visitor or so obvious to him that he may be expected to discover them. So when we apply Rogers versus Tor and the restatement and the comment, what the restatement is attempting to do is decide when are we going to require the possessor of the land to take steps beyond doing when the plaintiff has knowledge of the hazard, something in addition to that. And the cases all involve obstacles or conditions that are obvious, like a pole, a pothole, a slippery surface, and those things are obvious. And this case goes one step further. That is that not only is it obvious, it is known to the plaintiff. The plaintiff admitted she knew it was there. So under those circumstances, what is the duty? The Rogers versus Tor and the restatement say, number one, there's no duty unless there is some special thing about this hazard which requires the landowner to anticipate the harm. And the Nevada court said in the Rogers versus Tor, it was that the plaintiff had to encounter it. That isn't present here. And when we go to restatement comment E, it tells us that what the courts are really doing is they're trying to draw that duty line. And the duty line is going to preclude a plaintiff when they made the choice to encounter that. And I think that's directly applicable here, because what the evidence is, the undisputed evidence is, the plaintiff chose where to walk. The plaintiff chose to encounter that. The plaintiff got up in the morning. She said it had snowed for 18 hours. She said that she knew that. She had gone into the establishment. She had walked over the very area that she slipped on her way out. So she had, not only did she know it was there, she had actually seen it. And so then she comes back. And here's where we have this comment E problem. She is the one deciding where to walk. And the courts have cut that off because she's assuming the risk. And the courts are saying the defendant's duty does not extend to that. She has decided that. She's decided that she wants to have coffee and she's going to take the risk of this ice and snow. So under Rogers versus Tor, this is not a case of liability, because we don't have that thing that Rogers versus Tor had, the requirement that she go in. And when we go...
So if this plaintiff were compelled to go into the store, as Mrs. Rogers was to go to work, although I'm not sure where workers' comp fits in this, but leave that to one side, you would say that the store would be liable to its employee on these same
facts.
That's
what Rogers versus Tor said, Your Honor. And I think if you look at comment E and apply it here, you know, the court adopted 343A. Comment E says, you know, the premises owner does not have a duty to do anything other than warn. Then we go to another tier.
So you think there's some special relationship between the employer and the employee that triggers a greater duty than would be owed to the public at large?
No, I think the reasoning of the Rogers versus Tor court was that the landowner should have anticipated that people who work are going to have to walk over that, and so that met with the exception of the restatement saying unless possessor should anticipate harm.
Well, why wouldn't that apply here, where people who want to buy coffee could be expected to walk over the sidewalk by the door to get coffee?
Because under the restatement, if the person has a choice, then they're assuming the risk. And the other thing that the restatement talks about...
But if Mrs. Rogers had another path, I mean, the facts here are that you're saying there was two alternatives, one safe, one not safe. She chose the not safe. Why isn't that just comparative negligence?
Well, I think it's that in that realm of what's comparative negligence, what's assumption of the risk. And there's another thing going on, and that is that... what the restatement talks about is that when the person knows of the danger, then when that person has a duty of due care. So that person now knows of the danger, and it's their responsibility to exercise due care in light of the fact that she's snow and ice on the sidewalk. So when she walks in, she negotiates the very things that she walked on fine. She comes back out, and she slips. That indicates that she assumed the risk, and not only that, she did not exercise due care that was warranted by the dangerous condition. And that's exactly what the restatement talks about, this analysis of contributory negligence, assumption of the risk, and that the court draws the line and says that this does not fit within the exception, and as a matter of law, we're not going to extend the duty, and therefore defendant is successful. This case has one other layer, and that is the assumption of the risk, I'm sorry, the open and obvious, or I'm sorry, the natural accumulation rule. And that is a rule that recognizes that in snowy climates, somebody can come out and clean, and it can snow 2 minutes later. That this is a natural, common condition that everyone has to encounter, that it's impossible to eliminate.
But isn't the more modern rule with those cases that the fact that it occurs naturally and is constantly changing is part of the reasonableness of the response on the part of the landowner rather than an absolute rule of non-liability? I think even Massachusetts in Papadopoulos recently threw out the so-called Massachusetts rule, which is problematic.
I don't think it's problematic in this case because we've got the 343A saying once you have knowledge of this, then you're barred. We also have the natural accumulation rule, and in that, the natural accumulation rule, if you read the other cases that this court has decided, the Herndon versus Arco, Bradshaw versus Blystone, where the court is analyzing the natural accumulation rule in the context of the knowledge of the plaintiff. And that's where I think it's important. Because the natural accumulation concept is that everyone knows that snow and ice is slippery. These people know it's there. And it ties into that idea of the restatement that once you know of that, you have to exercise due care. And in exercising due care, it's your responsibility, and it's implied assumption of the risk. And the courts draw that line and say, we're cutting off the duty at that point and not going to find liability. We have not only the 343A situation, but the natural accumulation situation here. Just a couple of real quick things. I'd
like you to comment. There's a back and forth in the briefs on what the record truly shows with respect to the availability of an alternate safe route for Mrs. Nivens. Could you comment on that and what the state of the record is on that?
Yes, this is the evidence. The evidence is, you'll see in the photographs, if you look at the photographs, see on the left side is clearer than on the right. And then Keith O'Dell testified that there was a clear path in the front of the store where the doors were. And we referenced that in our brief. And that was unrefuted. And this is where Wood versus Safeway comes in. If the plaintiff wanted to dispute that under Woods versus Safeway, they have to come forward and say, no, we don't agree with that, or here's the evidence, or whatever. They didn't do that. So that's established, it's undisputed, it's you know, there's lots of fact disputes, but they're not material. The things that aren't disputed are the she knew about it, she walked over it, there was this clearer path. And that's also shown in the photograph. And if you look at the photographs also, you'll see that it is mostly cement with little patches of ice. So and I just direct Your Honor's attention that there are numerous summary judgment cases applying 343A to this exact situation where somebody encounters ice and snow and it's there, and the court's granted summary judgment. Finally, just one last thing. Mr. Becko didn't bring it up, but there really is no evidence to support this idea that she fell on the asphalt. She admitted and she drew an X on a photo that she fell on the edge of the curb. And there was really no evidence on this theory about the overhang somehow having an effect on the snow in that area. Those are just arguments that counsel made without any evidence. So I just ask the court to affirm the trial court's granting of summary judgment, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kent. Mr. Becker, you have 3 minutes and 12 seconds for rebuttal.
All right, thank you. I will be brief. I'd like to first just answer the question that Justice Pickering raised as far as this issue, as far as this clear path. That issue came up for the first time in the respondent's appellant in the appeal brief. That was not raised as an issue at all below in the trial court. And one of the reasons that I thought it was so important, I even mentioned in my brief that I think it's very important that you all see those color photographs. I submit that what you probably have are terrible Xerox copies. Those color photographs show very clearly this is a condition that is consistent across the entire area. There was no clearer path at all. And the testimony that he's referencing as far as Mr. Oxley or Mr. O'Dell, look at it in the record. There is no mention that there's any other clearer path. This lady took the very most direct path. They got out of their vehicle at the fueling station. The sidewalk was immediately adjacent. There was what appeared to be a very clear opening that had been cut in the snow. She steps up onto that sidewalk, which is a matter of feet from the front door of that, and that is where she falls. There's no evidence that there was any other clear path. They just realized by the time we get to the appellate process that they've got to find some way to make her undertaking something that's not reasonable because of the Rogers versus Torrey. They've got to find a way to try to make this fall within Rogers versus Torrey. And I think it's very important if you look at Rogers versus Torrey because the court first looked at 343, which is the first restatement that he quoted to you, which is basically the open and obvious rule. Our court said, no, 343 is no good. When you apply 343A, which is the addition or the amendment to 343 that added that final sentence, unless the possessor should anticipate the harm despite such knowledge. And there's lots of cases in Nevada that says that a person's knowledge of a danger or a risk does not bar their recovery. And as soon as you...
So does that last tail of the sentence effectively swallow the rule and eclipse comment E that...
I think it does. I think once you add to the question, and this is the question that theoretically the court has to answer, a possessor of land is not liable to his invitee for physical harm caused to them by any active or conditional land whose danger is open or obvious. That was the original rule. They go back and they add, unless the possessor should anticipate the harm despite such knowledge. As soon as they put that on there, that's got to be a question of fact. That's got to be a question of fact. Does the possessor... Do they still anticipate the harm despite knowing? Of course, that's exactly what happened
in this case. Well, so do you think gun lock is still good law?
Well, but you know, if you look at Rogers, it and Harrington, they basically say forget about gun lock. Gun lock is unique in and of itself. So I think, especially the Harrington case, because when you look at Harrington, you know, gun lock is sort of inconsistent with Harrington because it's not a failure to warn case. But yet they distinguish it and say, well, it's just a unique creature in and of itself. If you fall over a planter in the middle of a room, don't come whining to us about it. I think they just distinguish it and say, it's just something that's totally different. So the point I think is as soon as they add that last phrase, then it becomes a question of fact, and it should have gone to the jury. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we anticipated with Mr. Kent and Mr. Beckel that it would be good. This is the outstanding argument, and both of you lived up to at least my expectations. And your briefs were good, too. I thank you both again for coming down to Clark County to accommodate the panel. And this case will stand submitted. Have a nice trip back.